How's your fantasy team doing, mate?
Oh, I haven't checked it in ages. Everyone's bored by this stage of the season now, aren't they?
That's enough out of you, you whiny limey. That's soccer, not football. And this is Paddy Power's NFL Fantasy. Running on just the 6 p.m. games, it's only a game week long. No season-long boredom. No excuses. And £750 in prizes guaranteed each week. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning.
Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Tom Deakin, comedian and 49ers fan in the house. We'll check in with him very, very shortly as we frame up the AFC and NFC playoff race. Really interesting results this weekend. So much to be getting into. The Dallas Cowboys shutting us all up and suddenly, seemingly, back in business. Has that finished the Rams season? The 49ers lose. They've dropped down to the number 5 seed now in the NFC. Seattle and Green Bay, Minnesota all win as well. In the AFC, a little scare for New England, but they got the job done. Buffalo made the playoffs as well. Kansas City doing it in the snow. So much to talk about, and we will get into it very, very shortly. Just a quick shout out to our headline sponsors, the terrific Paddy Power Fantasy and our listener league, which rolls on once again this weekend. It's a daily fantasy league, so you can pick a team this weekend based on the 6 o'clock games and enter that in to the fantasy league against other listeners and win cash prizes. And it's free to enter. Head on over to our social media channels at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You'll find the link on there. Get involved, get stuck in. It is a lot of fun. I am Mike in on Wednesday, of course, for our regular deep dive and our preview show coming your way this weekend on the Friday. Each and every week, 4 pods a week, the Daily Fantasy Show on the Saturday, all the way up to and including the Super Bowl. What is not to love about that, gang? Right, let's get straight into it. And the terrific Tom Deakin. Tom Deakin, twice in 2 days, because you and I did some radio last night, and you're back again. In fact, you're back on the 27th of December as well. So the December hat trick for Deakin.
Yeah, I'll take the hat trick. It's kind of like Christmas. Bad smells happen due to how much food we eat. And I feel like I'm the bad smell at the moment.
I was going to thought some sort of indictment of our studio last night.
No, it was fresh. The football was beautiful to watch. And I thought the Bengals were going to get that win. But hey, listen, no Christmas miracles yet.
Yeah, they started so well, didn't they? But the Patriots ended up dominating proceedings there. And how did Zach Taylor described it? He was very... the Bengals wide receivers were bullied by the Patriots, as Zach Taylor described that, which was a little bit toys out of the pram, I thought. We'll get into that. We're going to look at both the AFC and the NFC in terms of the playoff picture as well, and in turn talk about how the contenders got on last night. Also, the Raiders, for example, big story with the final game going the wrong way at the Coliseum, which was maybe the most Raiders esque ending ever, right? So blowing a massive lead, dominating the game, but failing to score any more points, then being booed off the field, nachos are being thrown on the field as well. Derek Carr gave quite a wistful, but I thought quite brave press conference afterwards, saying, I'm not going to say anything to the fans. They don't want to hear anything from me. And it was in a way, I think that was the best way the Raiders could have got out.
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to hear anything from you, Derek. I don't want to hear your play calls, your snap count. What I want to see you do is throw the ball to your tight end. It worked all night. Now we suddenly start running the football. What's going on, Derek? Just actions. That's what the Raiders fans want. But yeah, what a shame, because those nachos aren't cheap. So they really weren't happy.
No, they're not. We'll talk about that in a bit. And as I say, the runners and riders and what the Week 15 results mean for the playoff picture. We'll start, speaking of playoffs, with another team that's confirmed their spot in the postseason. No surprise, really. They've been in contention most of the season. But to many people, I think still a bit of an unknown quantity, the Buffalo Bills, because they haven't been on primetime very often. I think a lot of fans see the highlight reels, see the Bills winning, know they've got a decent defense, an interesting quarterback, but don't know necessarily much more about them than that. And this was the big opportunity to step up in primetime. And it was a very Bills performance, wasn't it? 17-10, the final over the Steelers. Erratic offenses on both sides, I think, but including the Bills. But defense was where it got done. And Tre'Davious White, 2 interceptions on the night for him, which really, really staked his claim for an all-pro position and defensive player of the year, if it wasn't for Stephon Gilmore, I think, who he seems to be going toe-to-toe with. The defense full stop, Tom, played exceptionally well. It's a brilliantly coached side and well-deserved of their playoff spot, I think.
Oh, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, Nat. Sean McDermott doing a fantastic job down there. They're playing fearless, those Bills, and the Bills Mafia will be very happy. I think they just want the wins, and that seems to be happening. And you're quite right. Tre'Davious White, a former first-round pick back in the 2017 draft, replacing the likes of Stephon Gilmore, funnily enough, and they're tied for the most interceptions in the league. They're getting the job done, and they're not expecting Josh Allen to do anything above and beyond his skill set. If he can keep running in touchdowns himself, fantastic. They are a team that a lot of people aren't watching because there's no bells and whistles. There's no sort of too much excitement of them. I think we were all cheering them on in week four when they played the Patriots in a divisional game and they lost 16-10. That was their chance. And then we sort of forgot about them. And yet now we look at them 10-4 in the AFC East and neck and neck kind of with New England Patriots.
That is their problem, of course. They play in the East. It's the same issue that those contenders in the NFC West have. In another division, they'd be rolling the division, but they find themselves with the Patriots, and even though they've got the Patriots again, so they could theoretically win the East, that would also require the Patriots to lose to the Dolphins on the final week of the season, so it's pretty unlikely. So they've got to go through the wild card round. They've got to go on the road then. One of the issues, I guess, because we know the defense can ball, and Levi Wallace stepping up right at the end as well. Looking at some of the stats in this game, and as I say, both offenses fairly erratic, both the Steelers and the Bills fairly erratic. 7 turnovers all round, averaging just 4 yards per play. Kind of tells you everything you need to know. Offensively for the Bills, I think the concern has been, certainly in my mind, and I've heard others throw this one around, because there aren't any obvious playmakers, as you say, there certainly aren't any real stars in this Bills offense. But it has been even worse than that. It's quite slim pickings, particularly in the receiving core. That seems to be gradually turning around. Partly as Josh Allen gets a little bit more composed and balanced as a quarterback, because he can tear you up on the ground, but he can absolutely throw some dimes as well. And he seems to be a little bit less dangerous and vulnerable as a quarterback in that respect in terms of turnovers. He seems to be more efficient there. John Brown had a big game, almost 100 yards, 7 catches. Tyler Croft, who of course scored the game-winning touchdown, stepping up. And they've got a decent running game. Devin Singletary maybe is probably the closest they've got to an emerging superstar. Do you think they've got enough to compete in the postseason? Defensively, they'll keep games tight, but offensively, with Josh Allen, have they got enough to maybe cause an upset in the first round?
It's going to be interesting now. I mean, you're quite right when you say John Brown, 7 receptions for 99 yards. Just one more yard and he would have joined the Centenary Club.
They should have just given him the yard, shouldn't they?
Yeah, of course. Come on. Sean McDermott, dial up the play. Give him that opportunity. The problem is, though, you've got Cole Beasley, and we know how good he can be. I think he's still playing off in a slot position. But Josh Allen, the way to get him to make him make mistakes is to get him to throw that football. But then, of course, you do that and he gains in confidence throughout games. Of course, there's Frank Gore as well. I don't think he's still got the legs. He's my favorite player ever. But, you know,
when you talk about Frank Gore, wherever you are, do you always just take that knee and just look up to the heavens in hushed reverence? Is that always wherever you are and you hear his name?
I'm never hushed. I'm always shouting about Frank, but what happens is my right tear duct begins to swell up a little bit and I lose a couple of tears there. He's an absolute legend, but obviously you want Singletary, the fresh tread on his tires to keep running the football. But I do think if you're going to ask Josh Allen to throw that football and John Brown is, I don't know, double teamed him and can't get the football, then I feel like that's when they will struggle. But if they can continue to make quarterbacks, and I know he's the third string, Hodges, but if you can get the opposition quarterback to throw up 4 interceptions, then you're always going to be there or thereabout. So I feel like the Bills Mafia don't even mind going into this wild card playing away because they're 6-1 away this season. So they're a team that travel. They know exactly what they need to do. They're defensive. They don't play above their station. I think they can get the job done. You know, I really think
they're going to face, you know, things go to plan, and we'll look at the playoff picture in more detail later. But it is most likely that Buffalo will be the number five seed, right? Assuming that they don't surpass the Patriots and that nobody catches them, which is pretty unlikely. So that means they're going to be playing the winner most likely again of the AFC South, which is going to be either Houston or Tennessee, and more probably after yesterday's result and win for the Texans, more likely the Houston Texans. Buffalo going on the road to Houston, that is a winnable game in my eyes. And we've got to give credit to Sean McDermott in particular. This is their second playoff trip in 3 years, and he has bounced back, rethought this team, rebuilt it after a pretty lackluster season last time around. Again, without overstating the point that Buffalo isn't as fashionable a market as others, and the Bills don't get the attention that perhaps they deserve, it is, in my mind, pretty clear, Tom, that he is an underrated head coach. When you're thinking of, you know, McVay, of course, understandably got so many plaudits for what he managed to do last year, and the way that the Rams played as well as how successful they were had a lot to do with that. They're just electric to watch, and the Bills are just built in a different way. But this season, whatever happens in the playoffs should be the season, I think, that people take the average fan, average, the casual fan start to take Sean McDermott really seriously and puts him in that top tier of coaches in the NFL.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, simplicity is sometimes really complex, and that seems to be the Bills through and through. Sean McDermott is doing exactly what he needs to do. There are no thrills. When Shady McCoy headed out, people were like, well, can we replace him? I mean, what are we going to do? And he knows how to win. And I think as you get closer to those playoffs, he's learned from that wild card loss against the Jags, another high scoring game, 10-3. Those punters were knackered after that game. they know how to get across the line. And I think, yeah, I mean, he's not the head coach that people are like, oh, he's exciting. The playbook, you look at Shanahan or McVay. He isn't that guy, but he's.
You wouldn't mess with him though, would you? I mean,
no.
Where is he on your power rankings of the scariest coach in the NFL?
Do you know what? I feel like,
Tomlin's up there.
Yeah, Tomlin's up there, and he's had a fantastic season as well, seeing as you're on your third string quarterback, and you've had James Conner not playing a lot of the season as well.
Who looked good last night. When he was given the ball, they didn't really run it enough. But let me reframe the question a little bit. The head coach as a player, or even, you know, just a member of the organization, you could be working in the canteen, you know, you could be in the gift shop, that you would, which coach would you least like to be shouted at by?
Wow.
Tomlin's got to be on that list. McDermott is definitely. So I wouldn't be worried. Jason Garrett wouldn't be concerned. Belichick.
No, he'd just clap loudly. So he might burst an eardrum. Actually, I think he's the underrated one. who would it be? I mean, there's probably the Washington Redskins defensive coach, Mr. Ryan. Maybe he's quite a big
Rob
guy.
Ryan.
You wouldn't get hit by him, would you?
Oh, I think he's a pussycat though, Rob Ryan.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no worse way of going. I mean, I don't know, than being tickled to death. He does look he looks like a tickler. maybe that would be the worst way to go. I'm going to stick, I'm not going to say Sean McDermott just because we're talking about him, but I don't think I've ever seen him smile, and that worries me.
Let's find, if you can find footage, or indeed we'll take a still image as well of Sean McDermott smiling at the NC show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, let us know. I'll wrap that up in your Christmas present that I'm going to be contractually obliged to give you on the show on the 27th. And, that will make you a happy buddy. Also I want a t-shirt. What did you say? Simplicity can be complex.
Yes, like simplicity can become complex, and it's doing the simple things and executing them well, and that's what the Bills seem to be doing. And let's not forget, they would have learned from the Patriots in Week 4 losing to them. They couldn't get the offense rolling, and we know how many problems the Patriots have had. But what I like about this, there's still a chance for them to get a bye, and that's the beautiful thing about the Bills. Patriots need to lose the next two, and obviously the stakes are raised because their next game will be against the Bills, and then the Chiefs just have to lose one of their final two games. That's at the Bears and at home to the Chargers. And you know what? Those Bills could get a bye. I mean, I think at that point, you know, we'd all be, I don't know what we'd do. We'd all be lost for words like I am right now.
Well, let's look at the playoff picture and we'll reference the Steelers in turn. So the Ravens and the Patriots, the 1 and 2 seeds right now, and will probably hang on to those. Certainly the Ravens, you would think the first round bye, whether they hold on to the number one seed, we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. 12-2 and 11-3, their records respectively. But then, as you say, you've got the other two divisional leaders, Kansas City and the Houston Texans, 9-5, the Texans record, 10-4 for Kansas City, which is the same record as Buffalo. And, you know, refer you to my earlier point about being in the wrong division at the wrong time in the wrong place, 10-4, the Bills and the Pittsburgh Steelers, despite that loss, Tom, still in the playoffs at the moment, 8-6 is their record. It is the same record as the Titans who lost to the Texans. So they are very much in the hunt. And it looks like the wild card is going to be between those two teams, because the Colts are 6-7. The Browns fall to 6-8, as do the Raiders after the aforementioned loss at the Coliseum. So it looks like it is a straight shootout between the Steelers and the Titans. We'll talk Tennessee in a moment. But on Pittsburgh, a disappointing given they held Buffalo to 17 points. Their offense just couldn't get going at all, really. And Duck Hodges, Devlin Hodges, who is their third quarterback of the season, the quarterback that out of Rudolph, Mason Rudolph, and him, the fans wanted to see the most, I think. That seems to be the kind of consensus that the fans, Tomlin is backing the quarterback the fans want in place at the moment with no Roethlisberger. And he's shown that he's a playmaker, but he struggled last night. Even actually within that, there were some downtown hits to Washington, who he seems to like to collaborate with a fair bit. And Deontay Johnson as well had another solid performance, but just not enough. And like I said earlier, I was surprised they didn't look at the ground game more, because Connor looked really strong to me when he was running the ball, but he only had 8 carries. I know he's coming back from injury, so maybe they are just pacing him a little bit. What did you make of Pittsburgh? Easy for me to say. Pittsburgh's performance all around last night.
I mean, listen. I imagine you'd say 8-6 now. They expected maybe the Bills were there for the taking at home. I think it comes down to the fact in the NFL, players get injured. It's about who steps up next for your team. And I think, you know, we can all say Juju Smith-Schuster not being there. He's had some bad juju with his injuries and really hasn't got the ball. So yeah, James Washington has stepped up. He was targeted 11 times last night. He got 5 receptions out of that for 83 yards. And as you say, Johnson's there as well. I think they've struggled without him in the tight end. They'd love to have Vance McDonald. He's injured. And James Conner, I think the problem with him, they would love to have run the ball more with him. 8 carries for 42 yards. Unfortunately, Benny Snell Jr. not able to step up to it, or Jalen Samuels. So they've had to rely on throwing that football to do anything, but it's not the wide receiving core that we'd expect. And I think why Mike Tomlin's done such a great job is he's changed the ethos in this team. You know, not very long ago, you had Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, you had exciting playmakers that could do something, and they're having to almost mid-season change their whole identity. And if James Conner's not fit enough to keep getting the workload, then they have struggled. And obviously Devlin Hodges throwing 4 interceptions, it just makes life that extra bit hard for them. But like you say, they're still in with a shot, and they will feel confident learning how to play as this team is now. They go away to the Jets, then they've got the Ravens. So maybe they'll get that one extra win. I don't see them picking up a win against the Ravens unless resting players.
Exactly, which they might do, because that is a good point. It's week 17, of course, so the Ravens could have the number one seed locked and loaded by then. I mean, a lot depends on what happens this weekend for Baltimore. Who have they got? The Browns this weekend? The Ravens, is that right? Let me just check. So they got the Browns this weekend. So they beat the Browns, which they should, particularly now the Browns, although mathematically after that loss yesterday. Did you see the Jarvis Landry, Freddie Kitchens thing as well? So did you see that?
No, I haven't seen. All I've seen is basically the bad press coming from the Browns. OBJ doesn't apparently want to be there. You've got Landry not probably happy. It's not a happy place to be in there after so much expectations were put on the Browns. But what's Landry done now?
I love the Browns. Are just when you think they couldn't get more dysfunctional or more living up to the stereotype of the Browns. So they. Obviously, they lost heavily yesterday, right? So that was always not well on the sidelines. And at one point, I think it was a fourth and two. And Kitchens decided to go for the field goal. And Landry kicked off, just showed his displeasure on the sidelines.
Was this the yelling?
And they just went and sat next to Beckham, and they both just sat there like really sulky teenagers. Freddie Kitchens afterwards in the presser was saying, I haven't heard the presser, I just read the transcript. But it looked like he's, you know, had to do that. Oh, hey, you know, Jarvis is a great guy. It's all okay. And sometimes I think those sideline spats are overblown, right? I remember when Brady kicked off with McDaniels, you know, and everyone wanted to make a big hoo-ha about that. And afterwards, Brady was like, well, look, we're passionate. And sometimes that happens. And what do you expect? And which is an incredibly reasonable point. I think people are looking for an angle sometimes, and they're human beings, and it's lot at stake and tempers and passions are high, and you understand why that happens. But in the Browns case, I think it's just another piece of evidence that that place is the most dysfunctional locker room in the NFL at the moment.
It's remarkable. Browns fans got excited. They got that first win in such a long time. Free beer was flowing in Cleveland. And everyone was expecting this to be the year, and they've put a lot of talent on the field. And I think only now in certain games are they working out. They need to run that football because, unfortunately, Baker's spent more time making adverts this year than actually producing on the field. However, put it frankly, for non-Browns fans as well as the fans of Cleveland Browns, it's a decade. They're the only team in a decade, this decade, to not have a winning season. So that's 10 years of not even having a winning record. It is remarkable. I feel like if Landry and OBJ are falling out, it's the passion. Kitchens maybe doesn't have the know-how of when to go for it. Some play calling he's had has been suspect, but they've got the ingredients on the field to be a winning team, but it's just so, as you say, it's dysfunctional. You can't get a team over the line when there's so many in-house problems.
Yeah, I just don't think I think it's an easy take to say Freddie Kitchens is a new head coach and he's one of the boys, a good old boy. He's out of his depth. It's a little bit too early to tell that because he could, you know, in the right situation, still make it as an NFL head coach. But right now, I just don't think that locker room, that collection of players, he works with that collection of players. You need, and I'm not saying you have to go drill sergeant authoritarian, but I think you need a head coach with gravitas that has been there and done it. And, you know, Mike Tomlin, for example, if he was in Cleveland, that would be a very, very different situation, I think. And even, you know, fair to like Gruden and Mike Mayock at the Raiders, they stared down Antonio Brown, and he was their best player on paper by a country mile going into this season, right? And they didn't take any nonsense and made that decision, which looked cataclysmically brave at the time, but it turned out to be the right one. And I think that whether Odell Beckham is going to be a Cleveland Brown next season, by all accounts, he probably isn't, right? He's had a bad season on the field. He's been playing through an injury, possibly. He isn't happy. There are all these rumors flying around that he's been looking for an out for a long time. It felt like an odd move to begin with, didn't it? Him going there. And it wouldn't surprise me if he was one and done there. But outside of that, it's not just all about Beckham. There is so much talent on this roster. It's the same thing that people lobby at Jason Garrett and the Cowboys, I guess, is that why are you not posting a better record when you have this much talent? And you have to look at the head coach first and foremost there. So I wonder whether Freddie Kitchens will be given the gig next season or not. That would be interesting. They are back to the Steelers then, because that's how we got down the Cleveland tangent. So the Steelers are 8-6, and the Titans, as we said, are the other team that are battling for that wild card record. Now the Titans have an interesting run in because they still have the Texans to play. Remember, they're playing them two times out of three. So despite the defeat yesterday, where Tennessee, really disappointing, I think that went down the way it did, given the momentum that they've had. And I think so many people thought that this would be their season to take this division. So I think there's going to be, it's going to be difficult to pick themselves up from that defeat against Houston yesterday, but they have the opportunity to do it, right? They've got the Texans on the final day of the season. They're going to get past the Saints next weekend though. And that is where I think this one could run away from them, because the Saints, interesting matchup. We could talk about which way you think that could go, but let's say the Saints get the win. The Titans then are 8-7 going into the final week of the season, knowing if the Texans win next weekend that the division is beyond them. I don't know. One of the two defeats in a row at all the wrong stage of proceedings when they've had so much momentum might just be too much for them to overcome, Tom.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, Nat, to bring up a previous question, you asked me, who's the scariest head coach? I've changed my mind. I think I'm going to go with Vrabel. That moustache, the way it just dances when he's shouting at reporters after the loss against those Texans. I think Vrabel's the scariest head coach. Listen, they have to bounce back the Titans. It was a close game. We were watching it last night. Still 0-0 into the second quarter, I think it was. It was, Kenny Stills finally got a touchdown, to put some score on the board. They've got Derrick Henry. They've got a fantastic running back there. 13 touchdowns. He's 1,329 yards on the ground. They've got AJ Brown. Tannehill's been recharged, from his Miami days. He stepped up over Mariota and is driving that Titans team on. But I think you're spot on. If the Saints beat the Colts and, you know, the Tennessee Titans, they will be at home versus the Saints. If they don't get that win, I think this season, comes to an end for them. And, they should take no real shame in that fact. But going forward, is Tannehill the answer for them, over Mariota? Then I feel like if you were to restart the season now with everyone they've got, Tannehill under the center and ready to take the helm of this team, then I feel like the Titans should feel very confident about coming back next year and putting down more of a sort of charge over those Texans.
Yeah, that has been, he's definitely one of the comeback players of the season, hasn't he? With a remarkable performance when it looked like his career could, as a starter in the NFL anyway, could have been coming to the end of the road. The Texans, incidentally, obviously have the Titans' final day of the season, have the Bucks next weekend. So, there could still be some real twists and turns in that AFC South race, because the Bucks, God, we'll get to them in a sec when we talk NFC. My God, what a baffling team they are. But incredibly dangerous. So that game could conceivably go either way. So a final question then on the AFC, and we'll move on. We're basically saying the Browns, the Raiders, although mathematically in the mix, are done. What about the Colts? Now, disclosure, obviously, we're recording this on Monday ahead of Monday Night Football, the Colts playing the Saints. So there could be a very different perspective on this question, depending on what happens tonight. But the Colts, amongst the most disappointing capitulations, do you think, in the NFL this season, given how 6 weeks ago Jacoby Brissett was whisper, is he in the MVP conversation? This is a brilliantly organized team. I think many people felt they were the favorites, if not for the division, then a wild card spot. And here they are at 6-7 ahead of Monday Night Football against the Saints, pretty much done as well.
Yeah, I feel like Frank Reich was the chosen one last year for head coach, and the ability he's shown, and obviously the Eagles are missing him tremendously this season with their offensive woes. However, it is disappointing. They didn't go into the season with the right preparation, with Andrew Luck retiring before they could really do too much about that. Jacoby Brissett has stepped up at times. Let's not forget Brian Hoyer stepped in when he was injured.
Love a backup, don't you?
I love a backup, and I love a few interceptions that they throw right at the goal line. Those are my favorites. But the Colts, it's still within their hands to potentially take a win against the Saints. And I think there's no reason why they can't if Mac gets rolling. T.Y. Hilton, fantastic wide receiver, but he's always game to game, it would appear, you know, hamstring this and hamstring that. That's both legs. That's one hamstring on one leg, one on the other. They've still got the ability and defensively to step up. But is it a disappointing season? Did we expect them to get straight into the playoffs?
Well, I suppose because of the way it all went down with Andrew Luck preseason, the fact that they started so strongly, I guess it will be much like the Raiders actually, and drawing a line under that with the Raiders and moving on to Vegas. I think it will go down in many respects as a disappointing season for them because, you know, after Wembley and the way that they were rolling, I think, sorry, it was Spurs they won at, but after the London game, it looked like they were a decent shot for the playoffs. And we were whispering, oh, it's Gruden coach of the year. And, you know, they might end up 8-8 and that's pretty good considering the preseason they had and the expectation for the season. But I think they'll be disappointed. And I think the Colts will be disappointed if they don't make the postseason. Let's go on with the NFC because I want to get your perspective on the 49ers defeat because we were on air last night doing a radio show, but we'd wrapped before the later games. And so one of the last things I said to you before you whizzed off to get the train home was, what do you think? Is there any way that the Falcons can upset? Because the 49ers were a little bit banged up, weren't they, going into the game? And you said, no, I think despite that, their strength and depth, I don't think it'll be too difficult. And I think you were among the 99.9% of people around the world that did not see this coming.
No, thank you for reminding me of my miscalculations. The money was being put on the Niners. No one could see the Falcons getting that win. However, sometimes it just happens. They struggled getting to Matt Ryan at times and putting real pressure on him. The Niners have only kind of got themselves to blame. Gould missed an extra point, but that still wasn't going to win the game for the Niners or tie it. So really, just throwing to George Kittle, he is incredible, but I just felt like there wasn't enough balance in that offense last night. Tevin Coleman, it was his return to face the Falcons. Unfortunately, he just didn't deliver. And I can't really put my finger on it. Is it the injuries or is it, were they too tired after the Saints
Maybe.
Game?
But they were 19-10 up with 10 minutes to go, right, the 49ers. And it was an incredible drive from Atlanta. And I mean, incredible in a number of different senses of the word, right? You had the Austin Hooper score that wasn't because we're on review. They decided that it had hit the ground. And I felt that was, here we are again with those calls on, does the receiver have possession? Is he in control? I felt that was quite harsh, but it was overturned. Then Julio went in, Julio was called at the 1 yard line, but they overturned that and called it the score to go ahead. And then you had the craziness at the end, which is why the scoreline was a little bit deceptive because the 49ers, you know, went for it and a defensive touchdown closed the game off. Incidentally, that happened earlier in the season with the 49ers. Ollie, the producer, and I were chatting to about this before the show that, do you remember that happened with the 49ers and the Cardinals, which affected the Vegas line quite significantly in that one? And the over-under on this one, I think, was 49. So when that Falcons touchdown went in, a lot of people who backed the over were very happy.
I'm happy that they're happy.
Thanks, man.
I'm really happy for them. But you're right. I mean, that Julio Jones, he broke the plane. Therefore, that counts as a touchdown. I watched it live at home and a few choice words were used at that point, but yeah. You look at that fourth quarter, 19 points for the Falcons and nine for the 49ers. There just wasn't enough balance in the Niners team. I think, you know, the fourth quarter, it comes down to it. That's not the first time the Niners have lost in the fourth quarter. We lost against the Seahawks in the fourth quarter to the Ravens. It was neck and neck. My concern as a Niners fan is those injuries and how tired we are going into the end of the season. I mean, no one is fresh in this league and I totally get that. But you know, the Niners, if you can't spread the offense around, otherwise George Kittle will soon be a double team guy, which right. Actually he needs three people really to pull him down, to be honest with you. But you know, our last two fixtures are
like
the Rams.
Yeah, go on.
They're just the Rams and the Seahawks. So, you know, that's going to be two very tough games in the NFC West. And, you know, the 49ers have clinched their playoff spot, which we're all very happy about. Is this the time to rest a few players? But then you're going to have a harder postseason, you know, so it'll be an interesting one, but I feel like we've let too many games slip in the last play.
Well, there are so many things to get into, not least I love the idea of Kittle being triple teamed and then maybe more so like in any battle royale of the last 30 years in the WWE, Royal Rumble, for example, where he is the equivalent of Andre the Giant that needs 11 people to team up to throw him out of the ring. That's essentially how defense is dealing with George Kittle at the moment. So craziness of the NFC means the 49ers are now the fifth seed after that defeat. This is a week after the win against New Orleans. They fall back down to the fifth seed because the West is so difficult, because the Seahawks won again. Green Bay have an 11-3 record as well. So at the moment, ahead of Monday Night Football, the top two seeds are Seattle and Green Bay. But as we said a moment ago, the Saints will play the Colts tonight, so that can change. They could also go to 11-3. You could have four teams on 11-3 by the end of Week 15. The Cowboys, what a win for them. Absolutely steamrolling the Rams. A baffling performance from the LA Rams after they looked so good offensively against the Seahawks just a week before. Should have seen that coming. Again, Ollie and I were talking about that going into Week 15, and I said, out of all the picks, that is the one I'm least sure about going with. But I went with the Rams anyway, and you know, within moments, I realized the horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. And Jerry Jones is happy again, as he said, he's happy with the way the Cowboys are playing. So at this rate, the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl. JC Garrett is going to go to the Hall of Fame. But the Cowboys destroying the Rams. So they moved to 7-7. The Eagles 1-2. So that battle in the NFC East going to come to a thrilling finale. Keeps rolling on. Both teams at 500. 49ers, as I say, 11-3, the wild card. And then you got Minnesota, who won again as well. Six seed rather, 10-4, the Vikings. One of the form teams in the NFL right now, going about their business again, are the number six seed. So let's unpick some of this. That firstly, we've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks, Tom, oh, it doesn't matter if you don't win the West. I mean, of course it matters because you're not going to have home field advantage, but it's not the end of the world. It's Seattle or San Francisco. Don't worry about it because you're going to be playing the winner of the NFC East. So even though it's a wild card round, you're going to win that. I mean, that is a gimme. That's a free hit. Not so much anymore now, right? If that Cowboys team turns up.
Exactly. I mean, I'm looking at the score there, 44-21. The Rams had no running game, whereas on the other side, the Cowboys steamrolling. Both Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, the rookie getting 131 yards for Pollard, and Ezekiel Elliott 117. It was like the Cowboys that we'd have expected to see all season. They've been a Jekyll and Hyde. I think that's a fair reflection on the Dallas Cowboys. When we expect them to get a win, they don't. And when we think, oh, this is going to be a close game, they absolutely knock it out of the ballpark.
475 yards they put up. And this is Wade Phillips going back to Dallas, of course. And I know that there are flaws in this LA Rams defense in many respects, but particularly since they got Jalen Ramsey, and statistically, they've been one of the hardest units to break down. I think they were ranking going into this game third in terms of points allowed. And given how utterly vanilla and erratic the Cowboys have been offensively for a lot of the season, it's just absolutely bizarre that they, you know, if this had been a 27-24 last second field goal, fair play to them, 44-21. And I mean, some of the plays, the absolute craziness of the Tavon Austin touchdown, and loved his celebration, incidentally, as well. Tavon Austin, a former Ram, but he was as open as you could possibly get. It was the whole side of the field. There wasn't a defensive player anywhere near him.
Yeah, they obviously thought Tavon Austin, he can't possibly score. It's like in football when you're going against an opposition, once you score a goal, you're not allowed to celebrate. I mean, Tavon Austin was completely the opposite of that. One reception for 59 yards. But interesting enough, you're saying there about the Rams, they did do a great job of shutting down Amari Cooper, only one reception, two targets for him. But yeah, I mean, they expected your man Dak Prescott to start throwing that football, but he didn't. It was a ground game, and I think the Rams for some reason really struggled because of that. They have had problems all season, but they haven't addressed them. They haven't fixed them. Aaron Donald, no sacks for him. We know how dangerous he can be, but you know, the Dallas Cowboys, you say they're vanilla. I like vanilla, but I like vanilla with like a rhubarb crumble or something. It's an addition. I'm not saying the Rams are the rhubarb crumble there, but it was an incredible game, and not one for the defensive coaches to watch necessarily.
No, well, I guess on the Cowboys side, they took care of business in so many respects as well. On that side of the ball, Gurley didn't get a look in. Goff, we know, is an altogether different quarterback when he is pressured.
Yeah.
You know, every quarterback is to a degree, but Goff seems to be that his weaknesses are absolutely accentuated when he's under pressure, and they worked that out, what they needed to do, and they executed that as well. So fair play to the Cowboys. What are we thinking about the Vikings then? Because again, speaking of comprehensive wins, I mean, it wasn't even close against the Chargers, and LA self combusting once again, as they seem to do. And now there's talk, real talk, that this is the end of the road for Rivers there. But so is it one of those games, Tom, that we can't read too much into because the Chargers were so bad, or, should we credit another impressive clinical performance from the Minnesota Vikings, who had Adam Thielen back, by the way, incidentally, as well. So they're getting stronger. Dalvin Cook injury, though, to offset that a bit. It's a shoulder injury. So got to keep an eye on how serious that is. At the time of recording this, we're not totally sure. But the Vikings, I've been saying it for a lot of the season now, they are going about their business without anybody taking them particularly seriously. And I just can't work out whether they will suffer from being in such a stacked NFC that, you know, if things were reversed and they're in the AFC, we'd be talking them up as Super Bowl contenders, whether they will ultimately suffer that fate because it's going to be so competitive in the playoffs. Or actually, they are demonstrating because they're winning and winning and winning, and Cousins is, despite all the haters, doing it week in, week out, and they've got such balance on both sides of the ball that we've got to take him seriously as a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I think we definitely have. How'd you like me now? His famous quote when he was at the Redskins.
Yeah.
I like you, Kirk. If you're asking me, the problem with the Chargers, they gifted this game in many respects to the Vikings. You know, the fumbles from Melvin Gordon, Philip Rivers tackled, lost the football. So did Hunter Henry. That's four takeaways for the Vikings on mistakes made. Or you could obviously say that the defense was very good for the Vikings. Whether Dalvin Cook is a serious shoulder injury, they've got Mike Boone picking up pretty much a lot of the workload. And then, of course, yeah, CJ Ham. Tell me about C.J. Ham. One carry for 5 yards. He might get, you know, he might get a meaty workload at some point for the rushing yards for Vikings. I think you have to take them seriously. And the fact that Adam Thielen is back and Stephon Diggs, the question with Kirk Cousins, it works so well for him when they do have that running game that complements the occasional big play from him, throwing it down for Diggs and Thielen. But yeah, I think you can't write them off. They're proving that they are winning, and they can only play the team that's in front of them, and the Chargers turn up and weren't as you'd expect them to be all season. It's a write-off. It would be a shame to see Rivers leave like this, yeah, it's kind of there, depending on whether they tank a little bit now and get a good quarterback in the draft, is yet to be seen.
Yeah. I wonder, that a lot of reports again hyping up that story. It seems like it could be the end of the road then. I wonder whether Rivers will hang him up. You just get the sense he's that kind of player that he's not going to go out like that. So even if the Chargers move on from him, he will find a team and he will get a starting gig if he leaves LA, even if his season has been pretty lackluster. One of the stranger things I've Googled this season, Tom Deacon, regarding the NFL, Dalvin Cook.
Good. I'm glad you specified that. Good. Okay.
NFL, just this season. Dalvin Cook, oxygen mask ear is what I looked up before the show, because I saw this story, but it was a very, I'm not going to name the media title. Let's just say it's a tabloid newspaper that ran a story with not a huge amount of information about Dalvin Cook, having fans in stitches by putting his the oxygen mask to his ear. So I had to look this story up to just check whether it was a prank or it was absolutely true.
Dalvin Cook
puts oxygen mask on his ear.
Wow, a breath of fresh air.
Nice. I think he was, having a little bit of fun with us. I don't think he was legitimately thinking that is how the oxygen is ingested. Did you see Whitney Merciless in the Texans Titans game after he got the pick and almost ran it back to the house, ran it about 80 yards and then went straight with the oxygen tank and was there for about 15 minutes on the sideline re-upping?
I'm not surprised. Interesting enough, there was that game, famously the last game at Candlestick for the Niners, and Navarro Bowman had a similar situation. The ball lands to, into his hands, and then ran it actually back for a pick six. And that was the last game the Niners beat the Falcons. They could have taken a bit of experience from Merciless there, but he ran and he ran. He was huffing and puffing. Unfortunately, he didn't quite make it, but, I'm not surprised he had some oxygen after that one.
It was a superb performance, well deserved. On that run in then in the north to wrap things up in the NFC. So the Vikings schedule wise, because they are still very much in the hunt for the NFC North, and they have the Packers next up. So that could conceivably determine the division. The Packers next up, and then the Bears is their final game of the season. The Packers, on the other hand, obviously have the Vikings in week 16, and then their final game of the season takes them to Detroit, which you would think would be a gimme, although maybe Matt Patricia will want to play spoiler there. Which way do you think the North's going to go?
Oh, it's it. I mean, here's my theory on the North. I feel it's the toughest division. And by the time that anybody gets there from the NFC to the Super Bowl, they're too tired because they've played stronger opposition. And again, every season, the Patriots managed to claw their way through. Having said that, obviously the Eagles did manage to do it with a few cheeky trick plays. I mean, two divisional games for the Vikings in the NFC North. They'll take on the Packers and the Bears. I think the Bears are there to be slain now and taken out after that loss against the Packers. But the Packers will want to stay confident and get that game time in with Matt LaFleur's new system, or as I famously called him recently, Matt LaFleur. So
I like that. I liked it.
And I've got some flack for that. So maybe I won't do that again. Listen, don't worry about it. Green Bay Packers, you know, good luck getting a season ticket. Good luck getting a season ticket if you don't already have one. They're just a bit bitter, but the Green Bay Packers, I think they want to just continue that good, strong performance they've had. I think it definitely comes down to this Vikings Packers game. And I think that's a great way to set it up, on the 24th of December. That is the game, which will definitely play into, the Eagles fans will be watching it closely and so will the Rams. But, I think maybe there's something I like about the Vikings, that they're getting the job done.
Final one for you, Tom, on Jameis Winston. I want to wrap up with him because, as we alluded to earlier on, the Bucs are brilliantly mad, aren't they, to watch? They So Winston is the fulcrum of the team and the apex of the craziness. So he is, first of all, they've got the leading passing offense in the league. Okay. He has thrown 30 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. They've won 5 out of 6. They have 2 of the most terrifying receivers, if you're a cornerback in the game. Mike Evans didn't play yesterday, obviously, because of a hammy, but Evans and Godwin together are lethal. Winston is the first player, Ollie Thornton, our producer, was telling me, in NFL history with over 450 passing yards in consecutive games.
Yeah.
He is, on his day, the best and the worst quarterback at the same time currently in the NFL, often from, not even from drive to drive, just from down to down. What on earth should we make of the Tampa Bay Bucks? And are they going to be potentially dangerous next year? Is Jameis Winston legit? What do we make of it all?
Oh, I mean, this story has been raging for, when I say raging, it's definitely been a topic of conversation. Jameis Winston, first round pick,
But more so than ever, right? I mean, you're right.
Definitely.
Ever since he's been in the league, there's been this, is he up to it? But he came in with Mariota, and Mariota, and the way that went down was a little bit lame. It wasn't really working out. Quietly benched. Tannehill comes in and Winston just tears up chaos every week wherever he goes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Bruce Arians came in and everyone was said, listen, here's what you got to do. You got to fix this quarterback. And it would appear that Bruce Arians has said, there's nothing to fix here. I cannot fix his interceptions that he's thrown. But what I can continue to push him to do is to just keep slinging the football. And it seems to be working. What the Bucks do not have is a running game. That doesn't exist. We thought Ronald Jones II was going to be the answer to them, but they have relied on Jameis Winston just trusting his gut. Sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he doesn't. The problem that they are going to have, potentially Godwin, who's been fantastic all season, might have a hamstring injury that takes him out for the rest of the year. And with Mike Evans out, they lent on Breshad Perriman, who scored 3 touchdowns. Incredible stuff from them. Can they continue to produce? If it's not this season, which we know it's pretty much not in contention for them, then yeah, next season, do not expect Jameis Winston to clean up the interception part of his game, but expect him to just keep throwing that football. And hey, it almost worked, but what is Bruce Arians going to do to make sure that they can get across the line in some of those games and make sure that they can get to the playoffs?
Even their defense is Jekyll and Hyde. They can stop the run, but you can just score a ton of points on them, and the pass defense is not where it needs to be. Yeah, definitely one of those teams going into the offseason that we need to keep, I think, a really sneaky close eye on. The Cardinals as well, I think, could be, I'm going to call it now, the Cardinals are going to be a playoff team next season.
How about that? I like it. And obviously the Tampa Bay Bucks have got Texans next, and Carlos Hyde, I don't think he gets enough love. Why am I talking about him? Probably because he's a former 49er.
Yes,
he's had a great season for the Texans, and they'll try and run that football, or it's going to be one of those games where, yeah, you can beat the Bucks by throwing that football, and that's definitely what Watson can do. A Jekyll and Hyde team, but one that I'd say are going in the right direction, the Bucks with Bruce Arians.
You know what? You are not a Jekyll and Hyde character, Tom Deakin. You are all, hang on, which is the good one? Jekyll?
Which part of Edinburgh are we talking about? I like the newer part from where Jekyll and Hyde comes from. Listen, Nat, I've loved talking to you, even though the Niners have lost. It's never easy when your team's lost, but I am loving the NFL at the moment, and there's so many possibilities that are happening going into that playoffs. And the Seattle Seahawks, which I don't think we mentioned too much, they're 7-1 away. They've lost 2 at home. They'll be definitely hoping they don't have to play at home, in my opinion, in the playoffs. They're a team that have produced and then not produced at times. But the thing is, they keep winning, and that's all that matters in the NFL.
Indeed. And you know what? The other thing that matters, that's not all that matters. The other thing that matters is you're back on the show. You're back on the show at a perfect time. So we're going to get this weekend done and dusted, then the small matter of Christmas, which we're all going to take care of. And then you're back on the 27th at ESPN HQ, no less. So we can look back at what happened week 16 and look ahead to week 17 when it's all going to get decided. That is the best. That's going to be the best show of the year.
Definitely. And are we doing, is it a Secret Santa that we have to do, you and I, Nat, or do we just
Secret Santa? I want the Simplicity is Complex on a t-shirt or a hoodie, on a cut-off sleeve Belichick hoodie.
Perfect. It's coming your way, Nat.
Or a really aggressive Christmas message from Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, or one of them.
Vrabel.
Maybe just an applause from Garrett at the Cowboys. Just a nice, just clapping at you. That would be perfect.
Just a smirk on his face. The Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl. I'm telling you right now, we're all going to look like idiots. Great stuff, Tom. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, as they should, and maybe even catch you live doing some stand-up, where can they head?
They can head, I think the best thing, I keep paying for it every year, renewing my website. So maybe that's the best thing.
Yeah.
Tom Deakin is the best place to go on my website, but social media, would be Tom Deakin Comedy on Instagram is probably the best one as well.
Deeks, crack of work. I'll see you on the 27th. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too. And I look forward to it, Nat.
Fine work from Tom Deakin, as we established, I don't know, about 25 times on the show. He's going to be back on the 27th for our studio show that week. Speaking of which, Gab Marcotti, no less, is our studio guest this Friday at ESPN HQ. We'll be talking about his beloved Philadelphia Eagles for one. So looking forward to checking in with the terrific Marcotti. I'm Mike back on Wednesday. Get involved with the Listener League, as I say, over on our social channels at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And if you haven't already, go and leave us a nice Christmas review over on iTunes or whichever podcatcher you listen to us on. It all helps in the end. Enjoy it. See you Wednesday. Bye for now.